over the course of our lifetime, our bucket fills up with latent pathogens and bacteria and viruses, our big ones. And then you've got, you know, a load of chemicals, and it over time can overwhelm the system. And by the time you start showing symptoms, you're often a good ways down the path of moving towards some manner of chronic inflammatory, chronic degenerative something or other. There's, you know, disease processes in the body. And if the immune system is overwhelmed and can't deal with all of the things coming at it from a multitude of different angles, you become symptomatic.
You just heard from my amazing traditional Chinese medicine doctor, or TCM for short, Dr. Kelly Smolik. She's out in Vancouver. She's absolutely brilliant. She has healed me from so many things that Western medicine was not able to heal me from. And recently, I'm almost 40, so I turned 39, and a lot of things just started going downhill. They'd been creeping up since I was 34. Things like weight gain, brain fog, depression, anxiety. And when I talked to her, she would put me on something called the gut reset. That was the first time, it was a couple years ago. And one of the main things that she really emphasizes every time we talk about my health is that I'm a hairdresser. And I always wondered, why is that? Like, what is it about being a hairdresser that is so lethal? And she just said that you're inhaling a lot of chemicals. So I don't want to take too much of your time. This episode is an hour long. I want you to really pay attention. And if you are somebody who works with chemicals, or you know somebody who works with chemicals, take the time to listen to this episode, because your health is your wealth. All of her information is going to be linked down below. Her name is Dr. Kelly Smolik. You can book with her virtually. She's in Vancouver. And here you go. Enjoy the episode.
I want to first start off by asking, what is the difference between a TCM and a naturopath? Because I get that question all the time.
Chinese medicine is a comprehensive system of medicine. It's quite complete in the way that it looks at the body, how it analyzes different patterns of disharmony, and how it seeks to bring those patterns of disharmony back into a balance point. So as a TCM, we have to go undergo, you know, undergraduate training. And then the Doctor of Chinese Medicine program, at least out here in British Columbia, is 5 years. And then beyond that, I've gone and done years and years of postdoctorate specialty training, and just kept on with it and kept on with it. And it's complicated and nuanced medicine. And it took me a good 5 years to kind of, for the penny to drop and to really start understanding some of these concepts, because it's certainly not how we're trained in the West to think. This is nonlinear pattern differentiation. So a naturopath goes through undergraduate training, and then to my knowledge, the naturopathic physician certification is a 4-year program, and they learn and pull from a number of different modalities, where they learn some Western herbalism and some homeopathy and some Chinese concepts, and they kind of create this blend. And many of them go on and specialize, and, you know, I think in any profession, there's always the good, the bad, and the ugly in terms of, you know, how proficient somebody is with any particular modality. But there are certainly differences. And I'm obviously biased because I'm enamored with the medicine that I practice. So
what are the foundation of Chinese medicine, like in simplistic forms?
I'll try. So
because
let me know.
I know you've been so good at healing me from so many things, and I just want to understand, like, the foundation of it.
Well, the truth is that all medicine has its roots in some sort of theoretical foundation, and the roots of Chinese medicine theory and philosophy are grounded in old Taoist practice. Mm-hmm. And it's about holism. And we can go right down to yin and yang theory and five element theory, and, you know, how our bodies work in harmony with the seasons, and how everything is interconnected and inseparable, which makes it really true holistic medicine, because mm-hmm. you don't separate mind and body. You know, I deal with chronic inflammatory conditions. So if the whole system is inflamed, it's going to affect the mind. And depression is now considered an inflammatory issue. So there's real beauty in the philosophy of it. And there are professors out there who lecture internationally on the underpinnings of some of these really beautiful and kind of poetic concepts, which is great. I'm personally, as a clinician, a little less interested in that and more interested in some of the practical applications. But, you know, it's the same in Western medicine. It's got its roots in different philosophy, in Cartesian philosophy, which is, you know, A plus B equals C, and it lends itself to some separatism, and it's wonderful for all the modern advancements and diagnostics and surgical interventions and emergency applications. But for, I think, chronic disease and really looking at the body as a system, mm-hmm. an interconnected system, I think the Chinese medicine way really nailed it and nailed it a long time ago. And the basic tenets are unchanged and work well in clinic.
I love that. It makes so much sense. I love it. I love the holistic, you know, philosophy of it. It's not separate because, like we've seen, like, it's a domino effect. If you have like one issue that's inflamed, like you said, your brain's going to be inflamed as well. And absolutely. So you got to eat better, drink more water, go out in nature, like do all the things.
Do all the things. And again, in TCM, this concept that to live in harmony with the seasons, there's certain, you know, modifications that we make to our diet and our lifestyles to stay in harmony with the seasons and live that way. I mean, my gosh, I'm certainly not a monk myself, but you can go all the way down the rabbit hole with this stuff. So it's interesting.
I know that every time I've had health issues, you've always brought up the fact that I'm a hairdresser. So this is why we decided to do this. And I would love to know what's going on. Like, what advice do you have for us hairdressers, and why is it such a hazardous career?
Well, we're biological entities, you know, walking around on the earth, and we are constantly inundated in a modern life with chemicals and xenoestrogens and, you know, pesticides and herbicides in our foods. And then we've got, you know, a toxic class of chemicals that have come out of the Industrial Revolution not all that long ago, mm-hmm. that are now in all of our, you know, personal care products and cleaning products and what have you. So, you know, over the course of somebody's lifetime, I call it the bucket theory. So I'm basically an overpriced janitor. I help you empty the bucket. Over the course of our lifetime, our bucket fills up with latent pathogens and bacteria and viruses, are big ones. And then you've got, you know, a load of chemicals, and it over time can overwhelm the system. And by the time you start showing symptoms, you're often a good ways down the path of moving towards some manner of chronic inflammatory, chronic degenerative something or other. There's, you know, disease processes in the body, and if the immune system is overwhelmed and can't deal with all of the things coming at it from a multitude of different angles, you become symptomatic. And in my world of chronic inflammatory conditions, inflammation is an immune response. Mm-hmm. So I look further to say, you know, let's not just suppress inflammation. A lot of the modern thinking, I think, isn't going far enough back to say, well, where's the inflammation coming from in the first place? You know, let's not just shut this down or dampen an immune response, which is trying to protect you. It's, where is it coming from? Why is it switched on? Why is it hyperreactive and overloaded and creating allergic response or autoimmune response? You know, mental health stuff, digestive health, hormonal health imbalance. Where's the root? And quite often it can, you know, the older we get, it becomes more of a sticky wicket. It becomes this, you know, multi-layered thing where we have to peel back different layers. And Chinese medicine 101 in the clinic is find the pathogen. Where is it? Where is it lodged up? Quite often it's the liver or the gut or the lymphatic system. And those are pretty good places to start if we're trying to unload the bucket.
That's fascinating. And you mentioned getting older. So mm-hmm. when I was younger, people always say, like, you know, when you're older, you'll see, you'll get fat. Like, when you're older, like, bad things are going to happen. Now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, man, they were right. But that doesn't mean that there aren't older people who are super healthy. So we don't have to go down the way of, like, being, like you said, like, inflamed. Like, we can, from what I understand, is, like, we can continuously clear out these pathogens once in a while, like once a year, twice a year.
Yes. If you've never undergone a course of treatment with somebody who approaches medicine in this way, I'd say it's worthwhile to go through, you know, a comprehensive program to really nail down your specific pattern and what have you. But just in terms of health maintenance, because of our modern world and what we do and the way we eat and the way we conduct ourselves and our poor livers get hammered on our whole lives, it's worthwhile to be on a maintenance program. I personally do a liver reset every spring. And then in the fall, I do a gut reset. It's the lung and large intestine time, and it has to do with your immune system. It helps prep you to go into sort of cold and flu season. Mm-hmm. So that's my kind of broad scale maintenance regime on that level. I mean, there's supplements I take on a regular basis and things I try to eat and incorporate into my diet on a regular basis. And I try for the 80-20 rule, 80% for health and 20% for sport, because I love pizza. So
pizza and wine. Every time I talk to you, you're like, pizza and wine are your thing. how can you not?
Yeah, I'm not personally willing to give that up. And I'm hopeful that if I keep myself on a relative balance point, that I can afford those things. And, you know, people that come to see me that are very sick and things are more complicated, then, you know, it's best to kind of cut those things out for a bit to really take the pressure off the system. But I aim for relative balance.
Regular maintenance. It's like your car. Like, we take the car for maintenance once in a while. So we got to clear it out.
Well, that's just it. There's no filter in nature or industry that doesn't need to be cleaned out once in a while. Mm-hmm. And not to insult our beautiful livers, but it's essentially a very sophisticated filter. Mm-hmm. And it has, you know, 2,000 plus different jobs to pull off in the body, and metabolizing our hormones part of it. And it just gets really bogged down. So the liver has been this all important organ from a Chinese medicine standpoint for thousands and thousands of years. And my experience has been in the allopathic model, unless your liver enzymes are skyrocketing, which gets shown on blood work, or you are, you know, verging towards cirrhosis or alcoholic, like fatty liver disease or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, then they don't pay any attention to it at all, because it seems like kind of this non-essential, non-life-threatening thing that's just kind of humming along in the background. Whereas in TCM, you know, I've even had MD friends of mine go, oh, isn't the liver everything in Chinese medicine? And I say, well, it's not everything, but it's so important to balance out. And when we look at patterns of disharmony, we'll often say, you know, there's a type of eczema that shows up on the palms with these little blisters. Mm-hmm. And it's the root cause of it is what the Chinese call damp heat in the liver. And some of the terms sound a bit funny, but when we think about, like, there's inflammation, the liver's bogged down, and you use a specific formula to help clear that out, and the skin on the palms clears up. You know, what's that about? Certain patterns of PMS are called liver qi stagnation. The liver just isn't humming along like it normally would, and over time, it can kind of get a little more sludgy, start creating sludgy bile, create a gallbladder, and then a really interesting facet of Chinese medicine is this idea of life extension. And all of the longevity formulas in Chinese medicine are geared towards keeping the liver and the kidneys healthy long term. So this is constantly filtering our blood and metabolizing our hormones. And our little adrenal glands that get stressed out constantly, which is they sit right on top of the kidneys. So that's the kind of concept of keeping the liver kidneys healthy long term. That's a big part of keeping yourself healthy into older age, keeping your tendons supple, staying mobile, you know, being well. So it's very important piece of the puzzle. And chemicals, if you're exposed to them constantly, to circle back to the hairdressing thing, I'd say it's a good measure to do what you can to take care of yourself with gloves and masks and limiting your exposure to constantly, constantly giving your liver an extra job. Because as much as it might be a drop in the bucket, how many drops fill up a bucket?
So would you say it's, because I always hear that the liver doesn't need detoxing. And I'm sure you hear that all the time.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a big myth. I'm from what you're saying is you don't need, you know, a liver detox. It doesn't do anything. But it, what you say makes perfect sense.
So, I think there's a practicality and a common sense to that. We, like I said earlier, that there's no filter in nature or industry that doesn't need to be cleaned off once in a while, or at least given a break. Because I think the argument stems down to, you know, people that aren't proponents of this cleansing. And I'm wary of some of these cleanses out there that just push on and hammer on the liver and don't give it the support that it needs, or really extreme measures and, you know, pushing it hard with a ton of olive oil and stuff like that. There's some things out there that are just, you know, potentially problematic. So I'd say it's worthwhile to find a practitioner who can, like I said, address your specific pattern, give you a treatment protocol and work through that individually with you. Because I think the argument is that the liver is so sophisticated, it's already detoxing, that's its job. It's already doing the thing. But truthfully, it definitely gets overloaded and gummed up, and latent viruses and bacteria, all kinds of pathogens and chemical exposures and stress all really tip the needle on it. And it definitely needs a little bit of support. And in Chinese medicine, the springtime is the time to really focus on liver health. If it's a major part of your pattern of imbalance, of course, you can do it at any time of the year.
What about taking medication? Because, you know, I had H. pylori and I had to take really strong antibiotics. And I feel like that really tipped the scales for me, because I afterwards, I just felt like my weight fluctuated like crazy after that. So,
but more than likely that is having an impact on the microbiome more so than, you know, directly on the liver, even though the liver has to metabolize that type of thing. Antibiotics can go in and kind of carpet bomb all the good guys, all the healthy bacteria. And it's a really delicate balance. And we just don't know yet. There's lots of research being done on it. Lots of, you know, data mining and, you know, mass sampling of people's microbiomes to find out, you know, what exactly goes into the bacterial makeup of our microbiome. It's fascinating. It has a significant impact on our mood. Upwards of 70% of our immune system is in our gut. It's also a big part of the medicine I practice. Everybody and their dog goes on a gut reset. I put them on. I think it's absolutely brilliant to try and help bolster the health of the gut and optimize your immunity and your digestion, your absorption, heal any kind of, you know, leaky gut issues or inflammatory issues throughout the gut, which is also a repository for bacteria, pathogens, viruses. But I think that's the piece, is that antibiotics just kind of go in and go, and then everything gets a bit disrupted. So
I saw you've just gone fully blonde. I love it. It looks really good.
Thank you.
So I know last time
we were getting my hair done and my nails done.
What's that?
I said I love getting my hair done and my nails done.
It's so fun, isn't it? So do you have to also, as a client, take precautions when you get your hair done?
Well, it lands on my scalp and I sit there and let it cook. So like I said, I'm personally not a purist. I don't think these things are good for you. I do think we are relatively resilient And if we're doing what we can in other areas, that the system can afford a certain amount of exposure to those types of things, thereby doing what we can to eliminate. I mean, I can't overstate this idea that viruses and bacteria that lay dormant in our system that might not be creating symptoms in our day-to-day life that we're aware of mm-hmm. are a big piece of the chronic disease puzzle. Mm-hmm. So I do what I can to kind of beat those things back and keep myself relatively healthy. And then I have my little indulgences and I get my nails done and I get my hair done and I like it. So there's not much I can do as a hair patient when I'm in there letting my hairdresser do his thing to protect myself from that. But I mean, gosh, years ago when curly was really out of favor in the fashion community and we were all doing the Brazilian blowout stuff. Yeah. And then that came out as like class one carcinogen and stop using it. I was still like, man, maybe I can find someone to get for me on the Joe Sneak. I don't know. But it's terrible. So, I mean, I think it's prudent to just do what you can. And if it's daily exposure, there's around facts around, you know, load exposure, how often you're exposed to it, how much you're exposed to it. Right. And, you know, transdermally getting through your skin, nothing's really locally active, right? It's going pretty much straight into your bloodstream. Yeah. So
this is what I wanted to ask you about. So hairdressers will be listening to this. So a lot of hairdressers are blonde specialists. They're using bleach. So I actually noticed a couple days ago was just bleaching out my mannequin and I got nauseous when I breathed in the bleach. When I smelt it, I was very nauseous. I did a little bit of highlights on my hair and I just immediately got a headache. It didn't even touch my scalp. I just breathed it in. And so as hairdressers, again, like what can we do? Should we be wearing masks when we're working with
bleach? I would say 100%. And I think some of the more sinister things in that industry are, I mean, heavy duty chemicals, like you say, with bleaching and I don't know, perms and whatever you guys are up to
all the
aerosol products that are, you know, they're in the air and they're inhalants and they're an issue. And I, you know, don't mean to be fear mongering, but I think constant exposure to that is going to, you know, how long have some of these chemicals been around? Not that long.
Yeah.
And we don't know on a mass scale what's going to happen. And one person that might be able to handle it and not have any symptoms might not have the same, you know, viral bacterial load or genetic underpinnings or whatever else that could be problematic. So I think it's just a prudent measure to try and safeguard yourself as much as possible. There's also an interesting piece, something that I see in the clinic a lot is people that sort of over time develop these chemical sensitivities. And, you know, allergies are funny like that too. It's mm-hmm. like, well, I didn't have them a couple years ago and now I'm reacting to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, it's back to that bucket theory that your system's kind of had enough and it's giving you a sign that you're intolerant to this. If you develop, you know, instant headache or, you know, feel nauseous when you inhale some of that stuff, I think it's a good sign that it's time to take a step back and do what you can to treat any underlying imbalances.
Yeah, it's crazy that, you know, because I don't work with color, like I just cut hair and I love it and it's very low toxic. I'm not breathing in any fumes. But I was mixing the bleach and the powder just went everywhere. And I'm just thinking of all of the young hairdressers who've just graduated hair school and they just want to do color all day. And they're young, they're like early 20s, mid 20s. And they're doing this consistently every day, 5 days a week, or like over the weekend. And they're constantly breathing in all of that powdered bleach, even if it says non-toxic. So there's a brand, I went to a class and they were talking about how the bleach doesn't cause sensitivities and it's really good for people who are allergic. And it's not going to make you nauseous, but it always makes me wonder, well, what's in it? It's still lifting the hair. It still has some type of an ammonia ingredient that's going to lift the pigment out of the hair. And it made me think about Brazilian blowouts and keratin treatments. And there's a hair Botox now that apparently is non-toxic, but it straightens your hair for like 4 months. So there's something going on and we're breathing all of that in. When I was doing keratin treatments, straightening treatments, I would get sick for the entire day. Like nauseous, extreme headache. I couldn't breathe. It was horrible. And I stopped it.
Those chemicals were intense. And I mean, I loved the results for the 6 months that I had it, but they were intense. And I was thinking about, you know, if I'm in there for a couple hours once and somebody else is in there all day, every day, I'd say that that's, you know, problematic and harmful to health. And they made a big stink about it and took it off the market, which I think was probably the right thing to do. Yeah. And I mean, there's arguments. Interesting. And I treat a lot of eczema, and there's this theory that, you know, taking bleach baths is helpful. I know, right?
What
I
is
have
that?
A kind of instant knee-jerk reaction to it too, where I'm like, oh, but the idea is that it helps to, you know, beat back the superficial bacteria that complicates chronic eczema cases. And some people's lives have been transformed by these things, at least topically. But, you know, my philosophy is that you don't get to eczema topically. It's internally generated and it needs to be dealt with from the inside. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it.
Yeah. So you're breathing in all of this bleach and, I guess, formaldehyde or some type of a straightening, smoothing something. I mean, if it's not formaldehyde, it's something else. And if it's not ammonia, it's something else. And you're breathing it in. And you also reminded me that when I was working with demi-color, it wasn't like permanent or bleach, I would get eczema on my hands and contact dermatitis. And I would be itching for like 3 days. One of the reasons I decided not to do color, but I would always use gloves now. But yeah, if you're breathing in all of this bleach.
I want to say about the glove piece, especially people that, there's that very common type of eczema called pompholix eczema or dyshidrotic eczema that shows up with the little blisters all over the place.
Yeah.
Again, often internally generated. Lots of people can touch those chemicals and not have this crop up on their hands, but you can have, you know, topical irritant. And very common in young mothers and nurses and people that are constantly getting their hands wet. And having exposure to cleaning products or other chemicals, it'll be a really aggravating factor. And if that's happening, to use plastic gloves, not vinyl, but put plastic gloves under it. Maybe you want to wear something else over top of it, but some people put cotton gloves on over to, you know, I don't know, work with dry things. But plastic is necessary and less of an irritant than some of the other, you know, latex and vinyl gloves, etc., if you're going to do that.
So the ones that don't fit very well, like the ones that you get in the box color box,
basically like the sandwich gloves, like this gray plastic is going to be less aggravating to the skin than some of the other things on the market. Of course, that's going to, you know, keep your hands kind of moist and wet, which pompholix eczema does not like either, but preferable to constantly getting them wet and exposing them to chemicals.
Oh, that makes sense. Another thing with bleach and working with bleach is we would get finger burns or chemical burns from the bleach. Sometimes you don't notice, but it's actually kind of like a ongoing meme amongst hairdressers where we would always have like a white patch on our fingers and we'd be like, oh, look, another chemical burn. And it's a joke, but it's actually quite serious from what you're saying. So are these products actually seeping into the blood?
There's nothing that's not applied transdermally that doesn't get into the bloodstream, like for the most part.
Okay.
I don't know of anything that is not applied transdermally that doesn't get into the skin. I mean, they have transdermal estrogen patches. And some people say, oh, it's just locally applied. It's like, well, then why is it systemically active? How does that work? And there's some argument that certain substances, molecular weight is too big to penetrate the dermis. But in my experience, it's best to assume that anything you're applying topically just goes straight into your bloodstream. This is a semi-permeable thing we're covered in. So,
some scientists say that that's not true, right? Like, there's people who say that that's not true. So, I was on the fence. I didn't know. I'm like, so should we be concerned that our foundation is going to be going into our bloodstream and even applying topical products like hair loss products and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be very interested to hear their argument on that. And it's certainly not my area of research. But when I think about, you know, people using transdermal application of, you know, a nicotine patch or an estrogen patch or doing, you know, transvaginal estrogen cream that's going into the system, like there's just not a way that something doesn't go directly into your circulation. Once it's in circulation, it doesn't take long to get around the whole body, and then the liver's got to clean it up. Yeah. So, you know, that's my thinking on it. And I'd be hard pressed to get anybody to convince me otherwise. And you can make arguments, like I said, for different substances that have different weight that don't, you know, absorb properly in the skin. There's different weights of hyaluronic acid even. And this one will penetrate to this level of the skin. And this one will penetrate to this level of the skin and yada, yada.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, anything that you're inhaling too into the lung, you've got, you know, blood gas exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just... Wow. No argument for me. Don't know what else
That's
to say.
About. Crazy to think of all of the hair, like massive hairspray cans I have breathed in just over the past year. So, you know, I worked in film and I heard about this one guy through a friend who the film world is very tiring and it's very stressful. And we breathe in a lot of chemicals from all the hairspray that we use. And we're using very hard. Very strong hairspray. So they're almost like glue. And that scares me, but I would definitely wear a mask for that. But there was this one guy who would eat on film sets and he would never eat outside of film sets. So he worked 24/7 on film sets. And the food that was catered was just like really bad. And over time he goes to the doctor, he got really sick. And he told him that like his liver just, I guess, stopped working. Something was really bad,
yeah.
Sludge. Bile, like all of these issues in his gut, and I guess his doctor couldn't help him, but it's just really, really scary to think about.
The liver is a fascinating organ, and it has a remarkable capacity to regenerate itself, given the right circumstances and opportunities. And that's back to the, oh, well, you don't need to detox it, and it's detoxing all the time, and this is malarkey, and it's like, well... Why does the stuff I do in clinic work then? For dealing with patterns of carbonate in the liver, I can't really get around that. And it, you know, if you've got it coming from all angles, you know, unhealthy diet, unhealthy lifestyle, unhealthy relationships, chronic stress, chronic exposure, chronic, you know, underpinnings, then you're more likely to be going down a path that's going to be problematic. And there's a real tipping point around 40 years of age, I think, where things kind of start to go one way, or you can kind of right the ship and kind of go the other way. And you can make changes at any age. I don't mean to, you know, limit anybody's capacity to heal, because we can heal, I think, at any age.
Mm-hmm.
But people can really be a bit wild in their 20s for the most part, if they're not, you know, otherwise unwell. And then at a certain point, like you said, you're like, oh man, I've been humbled, woke up at 40 and decided that I needed to do something about this. So, you know, there's people that smoke their whole lives and never have an issue. And there's people that expose themselves to all kinds of things and never have an issue. And it's not to be a fear monger. It's to just, you know, be mindful of these things and do what you can. And if you set up your gut, I love the gut reset that I have. Yeah. I make all of my friends do it.
I loved it when I was on it. Like, I felt like, I remember telling you, like, I got my life back. I felt like I was 20 again. I started running. I would wake up at, like, before I wake up in that dream state, I would just think about just wanting to hit the pavement and go running. Like, I don't remember ever having that much energy in my life.
I get it. I feel like Superwoman myself when I'm on it, and you know, my waist cinches in and my booty boops a little bit, and I've got lots of energy and my skin's glowing. I feel great. And I make all my friends do it. And then they'll call me and be like, you got any more of that stuff? You know, first one's free kind of thing. But it just, whatever you can do, it on a day-to-day basis to limit your exposure to kind of noxious chemicals and regularly give yourself some maintenance and set yourself up for optimal wellness. You know, give your immune system a boost by working on the gut and give your pathways of elimination and detoxification a break by taking the pressure off of your liver. Just set yourself up for a better time moving forward. And if you're symptomatic and you've already got stuff showing, this is why I love practicing dermatology. And sometimes I'll say to people, you know, I don't really care what's happening to your skin. I mean, I care that you don't feel well and it's embarrassing and it's probably what got you in here, because all the other maybe non-specific things aren't a big deal until it's like, oh my gosh, it's on my skin. Right. But the skin is the canary in the coal mine often when I'm looking at any chronic inflammatory condition on the skin. It's like, this is just showing me what's happening internally. Mm-hmm. And it's very satisfying to treat, because by the time we've dealt with whatever's happening internally and the skin starts to heal, the person usually feels better right the way through. So that's pretty fun.
You just reminded me of a client that I had who came in, and she was just, I think she just stopped talking about her scalp, but I could notice that she has some scalp issues. And a lot of people come in saying, you know, they have, or they try to hide it because they're embarrassed. And they just think, you know, they tell me that people think that they're dirty or that they don't wash their hair. And yeah, it's really sad, because I know it's internal. And obviously I refer everybody to you, but not everybody's ready.
Right.
And so would you say that skin issues that show up on the elbows are very similar to what shows up in the scalp? I know a lot of times I do ask my clients if they have other skin issues on their bodies, if this is what's happening on their scalp, be it like eczema, dermatitis, like flakiness, dandruff. What are your thoughts? Is it different or is it usually similar?
There's a few really common things that can affect the scalp. Psoriasis is certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. Psoriasis, commonly plaque psoriasis, will show up on the elbows and the knees, and the scalp can be commonly affected. It can happen anywhere in the body. I've seen people covered head to toe. That's one common issue on the scalp. Another one is eczema, but it's a different presentation. It takes a professional to be able to differentiate the lesions and be able to tell sort of what's happening there. Seborrheic dermatitis is another one. Mm-hmm. Often people can have this kind of like low level dandruff longer term, and then over time it can develop into what we call sebderm, and it's actually a proliferative type of yeast, whereas psoriasis is considered autoimmune and systemic and actually affecting multiple systems in the body, and eczema is often considered more of an allergic response. So different things going on for sure with different presentations, but you kind of need to know what you're looking for.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that there were so many different types of, I guess.
Oh, and there's more than that, I'm sure. But those are the common ones.
I've got a little patch here that like comes and goes. That's like a little flaky. That's interesting.
Well, you know, tell me.
I do have to tell you. I will make an appointment. Promise. Just waiting to get my lab work back.
All right.
So you talked about immunity. And one thing that came up, like that I remembered when you were talking about immunity, is how Western medicine says that eczema, or, you know, if you have an autoimmune issue, then it's chronic and you can't fix it, but your body will go into remission. I know we believe that you can heal the body, obviously. But there's this idea that your system attacks itself.
Mm. Yes, I'm going to be controversial on this podcast today. Lena, you're going to get me in trouble. I try not to be anti too many things, but I really feel that practitioners who have trained at a high level with how to address these conditions, Chinese medicine is so brilliant. And I've seen people bring their lives back online and not have to rely on some, what I consider to be quite scary medications. Mm-hmm. You know, first order of business with autoimmunity is to suppress the inflammation with steroids, So topical or internal, suppress the inflammation. And if that's not treating the root, which it doesn't, and things progress, they're degenerative, and the next phase is to suppress the immune system entirely, which is quite dangerous. Mm. And your immune system's very sophisticated and on alert for cancer cells all the time, and mopping them up on a day-to-day basis. Most people have cancer cells in their body, and the immune system goes and, you know, effectively deals with these little malignancies that we've got cropping up all over the place.
Wow.
And you shut it down and you're at risk for all kinds of, all kinds of chronic infections, acute infections that can kind of take you out. You know, I think there can be dangerous drugs, really important for things like if you have to get an organ transplant and your body's going to reject it and you need, like, they have their place. But in terms of autoimmunity, this idea that the immune system spontaneously attacking itself and it needs to be suppressed or shut down or otherwise managed with a newer class of drugs called biologics that modulate the way that the immune system responds. Lots of unknowns there. And again, I'm rolling out a specialty program from psoriasis right now because I'm so passionate about it and I love treating it so much. And it's one of the most common, I think it's the fourth most common autoimmune condition, period. It's a $112 billion problem annually in the US alone. And Chinese medicine has brilliant, brilliant solutions. And by the time you clean up the root cause, you have an accurate pattern differentiation and you help drain this disease away from the body, people are more well overall. And that's why I love practicing this medicine. I feel so passionate about it. I have to give credit to my professor, who's a brilliant man and speaks fluent Mandarin and the Queen's English and is able to translate some of these really high-level, complicated concepts to us, you know, lowly doctors who otherwise wouldn't have access to this information at this level. I've been training with him for years. His name is Mazen Al-Khafaji. He practices in the UK and he has, you know, he's written the foreword for our English book on the management of autoimmune disease that's authored by a doctor by the name of Chen. His last name is Chen in China. And he's known as, you know, the go-to guy in China. And I was just in attendance at an immunology conference via Zoom last Sunday, and it's an East-West symposium for immunology and trying to bring together these concepts and the research being done on Chinese medicine. And, you know, we've got people in there from MIT and all these big teaching hospitals all over the states and interested in effective treatment protocols for these things. And my professor was in there, you know, giving a talk and being listened to by pretty highbrow academics. So we're starting to get there. But it's been a bit of slow going. And I, you know, unfortunately I have experiences sometimes where I had wonderful results with probably the worst case of psoriasis I've ever seen. And she came bouncing into my clinic and she was wearing shorts and a little tank top. And she goes, look at my smooth skin. And I was like, oh, great. And she goes, I, you know, I finally got in to see the dermatology specialist. And I went, oh, no, she's on steroids. That's why she looks so good. And she goes, no, I didn't. I just did exactly what you told me. I followed your protocols and it's worked. But I showed this guy my before and afters and told him I'm coming to see you. And he sat there and said, there's no evidence for what she does. Mm. She can use steroids. You know, that's been happening. So, you know, I thought about calling the guy and then I thought, no, I'm just going to sit here and do my work and practice in clinic and the results are going to speak for themselves over time. But it's a different world than it was, you know, 20 years ago when I started studying this medicine, where people are going to, you're going to do what? Should have seen the look on my dad's face when I told him I was going to do. Honey, go be a real doctor, please, for the love of God. You know, go study in Boston, but I'm happy and satisfied with it. And at the end of the day, we certainly have a different lens on, you know, autoimmunity and chronic inflammatory conditions. And I think it's it's worthwhile and we're starting to change things.
That's so fascinating. I feel like I just went down like this rabbit hole, but like we're back and they're finally listening. Basically, it's all of these toxins are coming at us from everywhere. Mm-hmm. And our job is to clear the system every once in a while. You said you do the gut reset every fall?
I do it every fall for health maintenance because I find it impossible to do in the summer and the winter time because I'm, you know, gallivanting around. And the fall time in Chinese medicine is lung, large intestine time, good way to try and balance out the body. And then springtime is liver time, and it's helpful after the holidays.
I should probably wait till spring to do my liver cleanse. Like, I liked it. I did a lot of it. I'm still very clean. I still follow medical medium, but it was just too much work. But you also mentioned the lymphatic system. Is there like a...
Can we touch on the medical medium thing for a second? Because yes, I just want to address this piece. And I'm a huge proponent of his work. And I get some pushback from people sometimes about, you know, where the information's come from and how he's doing it. And, you know, people kind of argue with me. But I will tell you, when that liver rescue book came out and I opened it up, I went, somebody gets it. Somebody wrote a book about it, and it's nice and colorful, and it's in English, and it's in things that we can eat, and the protocols aren't easy to stick to. But it was, these concepts are kind of TCM 101 in terms of keeping that humming along. And I am in alignment with what he has to say about it. And, you know, some people are like, oh, you're parroting medical media. I'm like, no, I am not. You open up our, we've got these big, thick, huge textbooks, you know, open up to the back of it, of all these different dietary regimes that you can go on to treat different patterns of disharmony. And I live in the world of chronic inflammation. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in the heat clearing diet, and the number one food to clear heat from the system.
I know this
from
one.
Chinese medicine. You answer it. You know it.
Celery juice.
Great. Celery is the number one food to clear heat from the system. And it's been known for thousands of years. So he's right on the money for whatever reason. And the liver loves, and it, again, these are TCM concepts. The liver loves a little bit of sour, so a little bit of lemon in your water in the morning. The liver loves green things, so lots of leafy greens. Chlorophyll helps you sweep out the system. The liver loves like highly pigmented berries with a high anthocyanin content in it, so the wild organic blueberry. Mm-hmm. In China, a lot of the longevity formulas have goji berries in it, mm-hmm. berries, because of their high antioxidant content, and it's considered kind of anti-aging medicine. And they put them in these liver formulas that help nourish longevity. And this is our North American answer to it. So I'm just a fan of that way of thinking.
Can you also eat? I know he talks more about juicing, but how's eating celery? Does that work too?
Sure.
Why not?
Go for it. It's just not...
Just not with peanut butter.
Direct administration. I think of celery juice as like happy human liquid Drano. Nice. It's got a sweeping action and a stripping action. It's got, you know, that negative calorie concept that we've known about for a long time before any of that information
came out.
What is
that? What's negative calorie?
That you're actually burning more chewing and digesting it than you're getting from eating it. But it actually helps to, you know, starve pathogens and strip pathogens out of the system. People with lots of, you know, candida overgrowth, it's an important part of the puzzle for what I do in clinic, at least, to help clear the inflammation and the things that cause inflammation.
It is a tonic. He keeps talking about it being a tonic, and I was telling my sister-in-law, I was like, it's a natural tonic. She's like, yeah, I'm sure it tastes like one too. Like, yes, it actually does.
I like it, but I've trained myself to like it over years.
So the lymphatic system.
Yes.
The lymphatic massage is all the rage nowadays on Instagram. So a lot of
wonderful.
People are doing like, yeah, tell me more.
Wonderful.
Like, so we do the liver in the spring, we do the gut in the fall, and you mentioned the lymphatic system. So I'd love to know, the other day, I think when I was on the detox, actually liver detox, I noticed my lymph nodes were inflamed for a few days. And I was like, oh, this is detoxing. It's working. But what can we do to like cleanse out our lymphatic system?
So yeah, the lymphatics, it's a network throughout the body. Mm-hmm. And we've got, you know, accumulations of lymph nodes at certain junctures of our body. But it's basically like our kind of garbage system. It's going around and pulling stuff out and trying to dump it. And they can get overloaded as well. You know, you see people with chronically inflamed lymph nodes, and they're just, they get overloaded and overwhelmed and stressed as well. And the lymphatic system does not have its own system of circulation. It doesn't have a pump. So it like the heart, you know, in our blood circulation, it relies on our body movements, our muscle movements, and manual therapy to get it moving.
Okay.
So things like rebounding are really good, and dry brushing and lymphatic massage. And I mean, making sure you're drinking lots and lots of water to just keep it moving. There's some brilliant remedies for it from a homeopathic standpoint that can help. Some people are constitutionally a little more lymphy than other people. But I like that this, you know, lymphatic drainage is all the rage. I think it's smart.
Apparently, if you're really skinny, this is why people are doing it, because you get like this beautiful flat stomach. Yeah. And people do it before vacation. And so lymphatic massage clinics are popping up now.
I think that's great. Yeah. It's an important piece of the puzzle. And I mean, I don't give away all my secrets, but it's like, that's basically what it is. I look at,
that's crazy,
psoriasis. And I'm like, okay, we got to heal up your gut. We got to drain your liver. And there's different patterns. It's not so simple. You know, there's plaque psoriasis, there's pustular psoriasis, there's erythrodermic psoriasis, mm-hmm. there's guttate psoriasis, there's all these different, there's psoriatic arthritis, there's all these different manifestations, and they all require, you know, customized individual treatment. And then whatever else is going on with you, if you've got digestive issues or hormonal issues or whatever else, that things need to be adjusted to, you know, deal with your specific constellation of symptoms. Mm-hmm. But the basics, you do really well by taking the pressure mm-hmm. off your liver, cleaning up the lymphatics, and working on your gut health. You okay. do your body a whole world of good.
Less processed foods, no caffeine preferably. I love matcha.
I'm so anti-caffeine. It's funny.
I love matcha.
We're all running around stressed out.
Yeah,
there was
it makes
doctors,
me so stressed.
I think it was during the Warring States period in China, and pardon my pronunciation if I butcher this, but by the name of Zhu Danci. And he came up with this philosophy of medicine that was primarily based on treating the liver. And it's because people were chronically stressed and malnourished because they weren't getting adequate nourishment. There's war going on around them, right? Mm. It's stress and nutrition. And his principles of helping to deal with the body and help the liver out still apply now, because our modern lives are kind of constant chronic stress and grabbing takeout and eating on the go and mm-hmm. moving around, and working with his principles is helpful. So if you're asking me for sort of the broad strokes of what we can do on a day-to-day.
Yeah, yeah. Because as hairdressers, we are, or anyone, like a tattoo artist, nail artists, nurses even, like we're on the go all the time. And when I was working full time, I just grab and go. I'll just have sushi because it's healthier than the other alternatives. But, you know, you're stressed out, you're tired, you're hungry. You're just going to, I used to grab, like, I love chicken nuggets. Just a massive box of chicken nuggets. I'd go home and just like devour it.
Get it. French fries are my Achilles heel. Unfortunately, just deep fried in canola oil, which is awful.
But I know you said to 80-20 rule. So on the day,
yeah, I try for 80-20 rule. So at the end of the day, there's different diets for different issues, I will say.
Okay.
But the heat clearing diet from a TCM standpoint is basically vegan raw.
Mm.
And there's a few rules that I live by. It's, you know, don't feed the pathogens, because mm-hmm. they want to live off sugar and wheat and, you know, gluten and dairy and things that kind of gum up the works. So yeah, don't feed the pathogens. Don't gum up the filters. and flood your body with phytonutrients, which are, you know, the plant chemicals that co-evolved with us over millennia, and they've got their own systems to help ward off, you know, bacteria and viruses and fungus and mold and all that kind of stuff. So those are the three basic tenets that I adhere to when I'm dealing with a chronic inflammatory issue. And always, always, or I could say upwards of 90% of the time in clinic, that's the first order of business, is to clear first, because most everybody with a modern lifestyle has, you know, been exposed to a certain amount of things, and we need to clear first. Then we do some rebalancing, and if necessary, we go in and tonify. So there's different diets that tonify that have, you know, more nutrient-dense foods in it. I'm a proponent of a plant-based diet. I haven't seen much evidence to suggest that, you know, going heavy meat or heavy keto or anything is a good way to go. But it's hotly contested, and it's a controversial thing, and people get the bit in their teeth and they've decided on one thing and they're just going to drive it home. But if there's one thing I know for sure, the heat clearing diet is plant-based, and it works in clinic, and that's all I really care about at the end of the day. Yeah. And if you're in a relative state of health, you should be able to have a broad diet. And I like the kind of medical medium style morning routine, which I try to incorporate regularly. Yeah. Lemon water, celery juice, a good smoothie. Yeah. Try to get some greens in me every day, a piece of fruit for snack, and pizza and red wine for dinner. I'm not condoning pizza, gluten, and red wine. I'm just saying,
vegan.
Life is for living, that's, you know, right, to a degree.
Yeah, I think the best thing to do if you're really busy is what you just said. Like, I can still do lemon water in the morning, 16 ounces, you know, half a lemon juice squirted in there, and then have like a smoothie ready to go in the morning, and just stuff in as much spinach as you can in there. Take spirulina. I know you really like spirulina. And just try to take like all the good supplements. And
I do. I grab and go. I have a supplement regime that I stick to. I think it's good to consult with somebody about what supplements would be appropriate for you. And I used to not think so much about them. And I was like, oh, I'm a TCM. I don't believe in, you know, hyper supplementing the body. But I've changed my tune over the years. I think it's good to give yourself, you know, a bump. And it's mercifully a different world than it was 20 years ago. I mean, I grew up vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Much to the chagrin of my family. And back in the day, you'd be hard pressed to find, you know, a place where you could go and get a decent plant-based meal. And now Whole Foods and juice stores and like grab and go things, and you just do what you can.
And they're so much more delicious, I find. Like, they're really yummy. Plant-based food is so good. Okay. So I will put the links of how people can get in touch with you. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think that we went for it. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate having a little platform to talk about something I'm really passionate about.
It's so fascinating, and I'm always so fascinated. So for hairdressers, glove up, mask up, protect yourself. Even when I do my nails, I wear masks now. Like, I wear a mask so I don't breathe.
Yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah.
Glove up, mask up, limit your exposure, and get in there and treat your gut and clean yourself up once in a while. Just do what you can. And if you need a hand, you can call me, or I direct you to someone I think could help you.
Exactly. Perfectly said. Okay, thank you.